Menace Nation, it's Menace Morning Time.
Wake 'em up.
I don't do the most, but I do a lot.
Tryna hide from the camera.
I'ma make a toast, cause we still alive.
I ain't going outside today.
No big.
Couldn't find our tick. So I'm drinking on Accutane.
I feel like Pac.
I'ma pull up my style. We gon' do a drive-by in the rain.
I shoot a shot. I'm coming in.
It is Tuesday, March 29th. Welcome to Menace in the Morning on Menace to Sports Live on YouTube and Facebook and Twitter. So anywhere you want to watch us live, you can watch it. We might switch actually here in the near future and just go on YouTube to try to pump those numbers. So if you are watching on Facebook or Twitter, go subscribe to YouTube right now, youtube.com/menace2sports, Menace to Sports. Subscribe, click the bell so you can hang out with us every morning. Mm-hmm. I know some people like the feed on Facebook because they get notified. So make sure you click the bell on YouTube and you'll still get notified and you can hang out with us every morning. Also, if you haven't peeped it yet, either make a note or go right now on our YouTube channel and open it so you can watch it after the show. I put out a little bit over a 20-minute breakdown of the first half of the rivalry game, the team up north, Michigan, whatever you want to call it. And I think it's important to do. A lot of people, I posted it in a bunch of Facebook groups, Chris. I didn't even tell you this. And all, it's Buckeye fans are awesome. But yeah, some of them are absolutely fucking hilarious. Like one guy said, quit being an armchair quarterback. It's time to move on. Like we all know what happened. And I was like,
do you?
Armchair quarterback. Never been called that. But I responded. I was like, I have a feeling that you've never heard a take on the game like this. It's pretty detailed. And I have an idea what was going on. I was very like respectful mm-hmm. about it. And he was like, everybody thinks they know what they're doing. Unless you're one of the coaches. And I was like, okay, I'm walking away from this one. Gotcha, bub. But, it's a cool look at it because I just kind of go, Chris made an awesome cut up of the, like kind of the key plays throughout the whole game. And then I went through and just discussed what happened. Mm-hmm. And what it really shows you is football is a game of inches, especially in a game like that on the road against a rivalry, a senior laden team. And it just, Chris. Christian said, man, instead of calling a barbershop for hometown hero, y'all need to call one and get Chris scheduled for a lineup.
y'all killing me, man.
Killing you in the chat.
I hope he's not black. That's got to be black on black crime. It's Will Smith and Chris Rock. That's crime.
But anyways, appreciate it, Christian. I needed a laugh this morning. I don't want to keep pumping it, but just go on YouTube and check it out. I think you'll learn something, if nothing else. We're going to do the second half, and then we're not stopping there. It's not just going to be losses. We're going to do a Rose Bowl breakdown of kind of the receivers, what to be excited about, what they did well, and got some spring practice updates from some birdies that I have in this episode. So stay tuned later in the show and that'll come up. And I always want to mention, go to MyBookie, promo code Menace. You deposit $200, they give you $100. It's a 50% deposit match. So you get free money to bet. I know with the Final Four coming up. And then I don't know if our listeners want to bet on horses, but we got the Triple Crown season is coming up. And I love horse racing. Mm-hmm. Love horse racing. I'm not a big sports gambler, which is weird because I know about sports and I don't really know about horse racing, but I love betting on horses. It's my favorite thing in the world. So
you look like you like to bet on horses.
But you know what? I went to the University of Kentucky for 2 years, right? After Bowling Green, before I went to Florida, and they have a place called Keeneland down there. If you've never heard of it, Google it. It is unreal. So for like 4 or 5 weeks in the spring, 4 or 5 weeks in the fall, it opens up. It's racing season. You know, you're in college. Everyone gets dressed up. All the sorority girls are in their little sundresses. And everybody goes and gets drunk and goes to these races and bets. It's a blast. And it's like you feel like you're rich even though you're not. It'd be like $7 to get in. And you're betting like $2 a race. Mm-hmm. But you're hanging out and you feel like I'm in some like the Kentucky Derby with Justin Timberlake and Beyonce. You know what I mean? Like you feel so big time, but you're really not. It's really like it's a nice, classy version of Scioto Downs if you're from Columbus. Like it's sweet. So I would encourage anyone to go check it out. I'm going this spring. I'm taking my kids. I'm taking everybody. We're all going. Got to do it.
Can I come too?
Yeah, you can come. Come on down. Maybe we'll have a Menace tailgate before a Keeneland race.
All right. I mean, I'm with it.
We'll have to see what is there any way to ship Dark Archie to Memphis? There's not. I wish. But anyways, Chris, that's all I got. That's my preview. That's my four and a half minute preview to the show.
Cool. I'm with it. You know, got some laughs in there, got to hang out a little bit. I do want to ask you, kind of as a wide receivers coach, because I am really curious. what are the top traits you look for? Because obviously we're going to segue this into some camp stuff and talk about, you know, who's really been flashing in camp. But being a wide receiver coach, what are the top traits you look for when recruiting a kid to get him on campus?
You know, I think the biggest thing, you know, I get this question a lot, and the answer is there isn't one, right? You're really looking for an alpha, a dog, like a playmaker. That's what you're looking for. I've seen it all, right? We had a kid named Brandon James at Florida that was 5'8". I've seen it all. Mike Thomas is 6'3", right? You have some huge receivers, some short receivers, some really fast receivers, some ball skill receivers. Like, I have seen it all, right? I've seen every type of receiver, from Terry McLaurin, who was super fast and didn't have great ball skills coming out of high school, to Paris Campbell, who played running back, no idea if he could catch or play receiver, but just had elite skill set when he ran, changed of direction. You know, you have Michael Thomas, who was so raw, so long, so lanky, so skinny, so underdeveloped out of high school, had unbelievable ball skills and had a great bloodline, right? There's so many different traits, but in the end, the ones that made it, they had a little swagger about them, right? They had a little, they had that persona that, like, they were an alpha. Like Noah Brown, no one knew what he was coming out of high school. I remember watching him with Mario Cristobal, actually. Him and I sat there and watched him in a workout. He was at Alabama. I was at Ohio State. And I was blown away that Alabama didn't offer him after that workout. But Mario's an O-line guy. But Noah was kind of a pudgy, didn't know what he was. Was he going to be a tight end or a big receiver? Like, could he run well enough to play receiver at our level? And Mario wasn't a huge fan, and I offered him on the spot, right?
How big was Noah? How tall was Noah?
Yeah, he's about 6'2", maybe.
Okay.
I mean, no, not maybe. He's 6'2". He's my height. And you know, he had that kind of asshole in him, like that. He had that chip on his shoulder, like just wanted to grind, wanted to be great. And honestly, coming in and being able to see Michael Thomas work really gave Noah the blueprint. And then he took it over the top. He was a grinder. And I've said it before, if he didn't break his leg in the 2015 season, he was pushing Mike Thomas to be the number one. And so every receiver is different, right? And you could keep going. Curtis Samuel, not great ball skills, not a receiver at all, had to be converted to a receiver, right? Was a true running back. So ultimately, that's what it is. It's those things that you can't measure on a field. Granted, 4.3 speed, 4.4 speed, that's always great. Like, that's always going to help your case, right? There's a million 4.7 receivers that think they have great ball skills. There's not a bunch of 4.4 receivers, true 4.4, not like high school coach says he runs a 4.4. Yeah. But I do always find it funny in recruiting, and I was talking about this with Eric Lichter at +2, how somebody was talking to him that's on his track team and was like, hey, we got to get this young kid in here. I'm telling you, he's Ted Ginn. And he was like, whoa, 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 because Eric trained Ted Ginn when he was in high school and earlier. He was like, let's relax, he's Ted Ginn. And I started laughing. I was like, isn't that shit funny, E? Like, every receiver I ever saw that was like 6'3 or 6'2, like that wasn't a 4'3 on the road, every one of them was like, I'm telling you, coach, this kid is just like Michael Thomas. You're like, relax. Okay, he's Michael Thomas. He's Julio Jones, huh? Wow, there's only been one. There's just like Megatron, Julio Jones, and your high school kid. Got it. Got it. There's the three. We found them. It's like, it's hilarious, those comparisons. But yeah, you know, so I guess long-winded answer is simplified.
So you look for mentality and then kind of the physical traits afterwards.
And a baller, right? You look for a baller. Like, you go to practice, he's just dogging everybody, talking a little shit. Like, you watch his rivalry game in high school and he's the one that goes off for 200 yards receiving. Like just has that it mentality that shows up. Like, when the lights are on, he shows up. Even when the lights are off, he's there working. Like, you look for all that intangible stuff to match the skills. Because there's 100 receivers with the skills to develop into a good enough player to play at Ohio State. Probably 100. But there's only maybe 10 that actually are that. And you got to go figure out which 10 they are and go figure out and then rank them 1 to 10 and go after 1 through 10 in order.
But how do you evaluate kids, like, when you go see and they're dogs and they're assholes and they're bringing in practice, but they're just beating up on like kids, basically?
Well, that's part of it, right?
Like, Julian Fleming rose the number one player in the country per ESPN, was the number one receiver, number four on per 247, but he was going up against bad competition. So it's easy to bring it against them. How do you evaluate that kid?
So I have a pretty strong opinion about that. And I get that it's
and you always thought Julian Fleming was a little bit overrated coming out.
I mean, but granted, he was a sophomore when I started recruiting him. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's not entirely fair to him. And, you know, then I got fired and Heartland recruited him the rest of the way home. And so he got I didn't watch his film. He probably got better. Mm-hmm. No, but the competition he was playing against was so god awful. And so here's my biggest problem is these recruiting services. And I get it. It'll never change because it's a money grab, right? They want subscribers. They want people to sign up for their insight, whatever that is. And so they're going to rank the sophomore class. They're going to rank the freshman class. Like right now, you could probably go on and find out the 2025 1 through 100, which is just fucking wild. Because what it does is for a guy like Julian Fleming, he's a number one player overall, like as a sophomore or whatever. And you're like, all right, I mean, this kid is, you don't even know what that means. In 2 years, kids are going to develop and grow. And we don't know if he's going to be the number one player. So
wasn't Danny Clark like the number six player for his class in like the eighth and ninth grade or whatever, and then everyone else got bigger, faster, stronger.
And what happens is these kids get so inflated that they don't go to camps, right? They're not going to work out at colleges because they're like, no, I mean, I'm the number one player in the country. I don't have to work out. And you're like, well, I mean, yeah, technically you don't have to, but it'd be best for both of us if you did, right? Because then you can find out exactly what it is. You give me 30 minutes, 40 minutes with a kid one-on-one or in a small group setting at a camp doing drills, you know, do some one-on-ones. I'm going to know everything I need to know about that kid, right? I don't care who he plays in high school. I now know because I have my hands on him. I worked him out, right? And those kids won't do it. They won't do it. And I talk about it all the time. It's Danny Davis who went to Wisconsin. He would not come to camp. Because he thought it was almost like he was angry at me for not offering him. He's like, I'm not coming to camp. You didn't offer me. And it's like, bro, you want to come to Ohio State. I would love for you to come to Ohio State. I want you to come work out to see if you're good enough to play here. You should want that too. Right. But the problem these kids are in is they go to camp. He had a Wisconsin offer. If Wisconsin finds out that he goes to camp with us and I don't offer him, what do you think they think?
Oh, he's not good enough.
Yeah. Immediately they're like, ooh. Let's watch his tape again. Throw his tape up. So it's just a dangerous, it's such a fragile world recruiting is because there was another kid, Alex.
Do you ever use that to create doubt in other coaches' head? Like bring in a kid. Cause that'd be such a big time thing to do. I would do it all the time. Bring a kid in.
I mean, no, not really. It was, you know, you're focused on yourself. If the kid's good enough and we want him, we'll offer him. If not,
you're crazy. I know you worry about other people. You're not, you don't have me fooled.
No, I'm just saying like what would, so don't offer him even though I want him. Like,
no, I'm just an asshole. Go ahead.
Right. But I had another kid, Alex Stump, who just refused to come to camp. He always said like, oh, I feel like my tape speaks for itself. Right. And it's like, okay. I mean, your tape's not that good, but okay. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good. It's not, but it's not exceptional. And it's like, and I was pushing hard. And finally Urban was like, no, I think we got to take this kid. I'm like, oh, I don't think we should, but okay. And another about the kid was a great kid, but at the end of the day, he wasn't good enough to play at Ohio State. And I had a feeling he wasn't, but I would have known that had I had him in camp, and he would have known that, and he would have saved himself years. He went to Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. I don't think he played much, but but shout out to him. I mean, got a Vanderbilt degree, living a great life. Like one of the best friends with like Nick Bosa and like Sam Hubbard and all those guys. So I guess he wouldn't be best friends with them if he didn't come. But at the end of the day, my moral story is he would have not have wasted time coming to Ohio State if he'd have come to camp. Because we'd have realized he wasn't good enough. We would have talked to him and told him, we think you need to look somewhere else because we have other plans in the receiver room. And he would have went somewhere else and who knows, might have played and then might have proved us wrong, right? Some of the times it's circumstantial, right? A kid comes to Ohio State, not good enough, right? Doesn't play. Then he's not as motivated, doesn't work as hard. Where if he went to Indiana, he might have played, got motivated, grinded his ass off, and become a great player and proved us wrong. So like circumstance matters sometimes. And that's what's wrong with recruiting. Julian Fleming, number one player overall. And I'm not saying he's not good enough. We don't know that yet. But he was playing against dudes that look like my 12-year-old. And it's just, and he looked like an NFL player as a sophomore, like grown ass man. Mm-hmm. And it's just,
you went to go see him, right?
Oh God. Yeah. So that was one of the only times I went and saw a freshman I mean, unless he was just in an area, right? Like if I'm in South Florida recruiting, I stop by a high school, there's a freshman, I'm going to see him, right? But Julian Fleming was one of the first 14-year-olds that I scheduled a trip because he was in the absolute middle of nowhere, Pennsylvania, right? I don't even remember. I think I flew into Pittsburgh, maybe drove, I don't know, 2 hours. This is going to be one of those stories. Like I walked to school in the snow uphill both ways, right? Like, someone's going to Google it and be like, bitch, it is an hour and 10 minutes. Like, but whatever it was, I mean, it was like a long ass trip. It took an entire day of recruiting, which if you know, you have like 15 days, maybe 20 days recruiting, depending on the assistant coach, like to take a whole day for a 14-year-old, that son of a bitch better be a dog.
Right.
And you know, to all intents and purposes, he was supposed to be that. Well, I flew into whatever airport, drove however many hours to his high school, like wiped the whole day out. And I talked to him, you know, the week before about, I'm going to come on Tuesday, whatever. I show up at the high school and the high school coach comes out. We talk to him and he's like, yeah, so Julian's not here today. I was like, what do you mean he's not here?
I told him I was going to be here.
Yeah. I don't, let me call him. He called him and he was like, he had a dentist appointment. Then he went to lunch with his grandpa or something and just wasn't there the whole day. So I did all that travel to go see him. I didn't even get to see him. And
damn,
so I
was, didn't get to see he him obviously, at all.
He's a
great kid. Mm-hmm.
Phenomenal kid. So it actually paid off because he was like, coach, I am so sorry. I completely forgot. I was like, well, listen, you got to do me a favor now. I flew my ass and drove my ass all the way here to see you as a freshman. You got to do me a favor. This summer, you got to come to Ohio State your first trip. And he was like, bet, done. So I was like, yeah, huge. Fuck it. That's all you want to do anyways. You're getting into the school to try to get the kid to come on campus in the summer. So really, mission accomplished, right? Because I parlayed it. I mean, he felt bad. I knew he felt bad. I'm like, all right, you feel bad? Let's see how bad you feel. Come see the Buckeyes.
Come see the Buckeyes.
He did. First trip, him and his family came out and spent a whole couple days, really 2 days with us. Or really, it was like a day and then the morning and left. But that's how we started recruiting Julian Fleming. So kind of a gift and a curse, right? Didn't get to see him, but parlayed it into getting him on campus, and now he's a Buckeye, which
I'm not taking
credit for it, but that certainly...
No, take credit for it. No,
I do believe that gives you an edge. I always tried to do that. I was like, I want to be the first visit because it's like the first girl you ever have sex with. It always just holds a special place in your heart, right? The first time you experience something like that, it's like, man, she was awesome. Like that's how it is with visits. You go to Ohio State for the first time, you've never seen a place like that, you're just, everything you see is like, whoa, holy shit.
And then everything's compared to you. Every girl after.
Every school you go to, they lose that shock factor because the first school you visited already took that from you, right? You can't lose your virginity twice. Once you lost it, you lost it. And that person that you gave it to, they took it and they have it forever. It's the same way in recruiting. It really is.
I got mine back. We're born again over here.
That's not how it works. I don't care what anyone tells you.
I want to ask about Mike Mitchell. You were on campus when Mike Mitchell was on campus?
Yeah.
He was like 5-star, all world, all everything. And then he was out in like 2 months.
Yeah.
Is that a guy that got to campus was like, I'm not good enough?
No, it wasn't that he wasn't good enough. It wasn't for him. It wasn't for him being that far away from home. Like, I don't know. It was just, you know, you're not supposed to say this, but like sometimes, you know, suburban kids with great families, like they go far from home and they're like, oh, but my mom's not here to make my eggs. Like, but who does my laundry? And it's like, what, bitch? Do your own fucking laundry. What do you mean?
But I think his brother ended up coming to campus too and then also transferring.
Yeah, his brother was like the number one basketball player in the world or something crazy.
I don't like talking about this, but I'll say it real quick. Mickey Mitchell was the best freshman in high school basketball player I'd ever seen. Like he started on that PCA team with Julius Randle, and he was a better player than Julius Randle that year. He was a 6'7" point guard. He was the best I'd ever seen. And then he had the two ACLs, and he played quarterback also. And I don't know, he just couldn't ever get that explosion back from his freshman to sophomore year. He was incredible, came to Ohio State, didn't really play, but go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, it was a big deal, right? Mike Mitchell, I think he was the number one linebacker in the country. If not, he was a 5-star. He was like number two. He was all everything. And all we heard about in recruiting was his younger brother is an absolute, like, dominant basketball player. Mm-hmm. And so when we landed him, the basketball coaches were pissing themselves like, hell yeah, like, we got an inside track on this kid. And they did. And that kid, believe it or not, the younger brother loved Ohio State.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Mitchell fell in love with Ohio State, if that makes sense. Like the younger brother was a lot of the reason why Mike came to Ohio State because the younger brother loved Ohio State, talked about Ohio State all the time. Like he was recruiting Mike for us, basically. And he was the big time basketball recruit. So yeah, interesting story. And I don't mean to call the kid soft. It was way more than that. He wasn't soft at all, but it just wasn't a good fit for him. I mean, being that far from home and how hard the program was, it just wasn't a good fit for him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I mean, Mickey was the best I'd ever seen. I mean, the best I'd ever seen as a freshman. And obviously, like, in Akron, that's, like, sacrilegious to say because, like, yeah, LeBron's...
You got to turn in your 3-3-0 card.
I don't have to turn in a damn thing. If it was February, I would have had to because Mickey is white. But I'll digress. I do want to ask you, what's the hardest thing as a wide receiver coach to teach these kids? When you get them in, like, is it the route running? Is it ball skills? Can you really ever teach someone to be an expert route runner? Like, what is the most difficult thing you've had teaching wise once you get a receiver in to Ohio State?
The hardest, I mean, you know what it is. You know what a receiver is, right? Mm-hmm. A prima donna, wants to score touchdowns. The hardest thing to get a receiver to do is block. Simple as that. It's just no way around it, right? Unless they're just big physical guys and they see that as their way on the field, like Noah Brown did, Evan Spencer did. Like, there were some guys you're just like, damn, he likes fucking people up. And he knows he's going to get on the field because he's like that, blocking. And then obviously they need to be good enough in the pass game. You can't just have some big fat kid that can block. But that's the hardest thing, right? Getting, you know, Michael Thomas or Devin Smith to block a safety in quarters, like push crack a safety. Yeah. Like that's tough to do. Cause that kid, they're not usually huge into like banging their head against someone and making contact. They're not overly, you know, they don't love giving max effort. Think about it. You are trying to keep an athlete with a bunch of space from getting where he wants to get. Do you know how hard that is? You have to really, really, really want to do your job and be accountable.
Harder, huh? Who was harder to get to buy in? Benjamin Victor or Devin Smith on the blocking side?
Devin.
Devin harder than Ben?
Oh yeah, Ben was all in. He just couldn't. He just wasn't like built for it. But he would try. Devin didn't want to try.
Got you. I just remember that locker room comment that Urban Meyer made after the Penn State win where he had that incredible catch and just long stride to touchdown. He basically said, oh, he never wanted to block, but here he is. Like, see, when we get him on the field, he could do a good job. But I guess that was just Urban being an asshole.
Well, and that's the difference. That's the difference in Ohio State now and Alabama and comparison to Urban Meyer's offense, right? Mm. Because he was a receiver coach, because he coached receivers in the 90s, back when it was like Johnny Johnson from, you know, Cleveland St. Ignatius. He was able to coach them like linemen and like really grind them and make them tough and block. And if you look at his receiver groups, they were never any good. Like they weren't like prolific receiver groups. They just were tough and well coached, which I guess is what you want a head coach, maybe not a receiver coach. But either way, you had to block under Urban Meyer. You could not be Jameson Williams at Alabama, where you really, I mean, you might try to block every now and then, but they just accept the fact that you bring so much value in your playmaking ability that you might miss a block or two. And you know what? That corner or safety, he shouldn't be able to tackle the running back at Alabama, right? He shouldn't be able to tackle Ezekiel Elliott. Now, there's that, right? And then there's the other side of just understanding how to, if you could just remove one guy from the picture, at least we went one for one, right? The only problem I have with any offense nowadays is when you go 0 for 1, right? Mm. You don't remove a guy because it's not hard to remove a guy, right? Run a go route. Someone's got to go with you. Yeah. And nowadays with RPOs and shit like that, you can hand it to the running back. Trayvon Henderson can launch it. Like someone has to go with you if you run a go route with max effort. But you watch kind of, you know, and we watched the Michigan breakdown. There's a clip where Jackson Smith and Jigba and Garrett Wilson just come off the ball and just kind of stand there and like put their hands on. They're not even giving effort blocking. They just stand there. Trayvon Henderson ends up having a tiny little space to try to go make a safety miss because there's four bodies in there. Like, at least go one for one.
Right. Like, at least
back to your question. One. Blocking is by far the hardest thing to get a receiver to do just because most of them are prima donnas.
Okay. That makes sense. I do want to transition to spring practice. We both kind of heard our fair share of things. Not your, you know, typical message board type stuff. But McAllister lost his black stripe. That's the kid from Oklahoma State, obviously. Yeah. That should be no surprise there because of all the people with the black stripe. He's the one that's been around the college program, and then he's also been around Jim Knowles. And
yeah, obviously, I mean, he knows the defensive system. He knows what's expected of him. He's a veteran. He's coming in trying to be a starter. Like, of course, if that kid didn't lose his black stripe this early, you'd be like, man, That was a swing and miss, right? So it's clear that he is what, I mean, Jim Knowles would have never brought him here if he wasn't, right?
Exactly.
He is exactly what Jim Knowles thought he was and what Ohio State needs. They need a veteran on defense. They need, you think about great defenses, right? I think about my time at Ohio State. The great defenses we had, Christian Bryant was the absolute alpha fucking wolf.
Underrated.
The show. And don't get me wrong. We had John Simon. We had these other players. And John Simon was only 2012. But we had other players that were grown men. But Christian Bryant was the heart, the soul, the alpha. Who is that on this defense been the last 2 years?
Nobody.
Pete Warner? And I'm not – Pete's a great – is a great, great player. He's not guy
Christian Bryant
that brings the swagger. Mm-hmm. Like, you talk to Christian Bryant right now. My man's successful as shit in the business world. His brother just won the fucking Thorpe Award. Going to be probably a second round pick. Like, you talk to Christian right now, he still has that swagger. Mm-hmm. Like, he still has that shit about him where you're like, this fucking dude is a real one, like a dog.
Right.
Right. And you have to have that. 2014, Curtis Grant, fucking dog. I've had him on a show 100 times. I put a video out there of just leader. It was a video we showed in 2015 about leadership, and it was all about Curtis Grant. Like, when he spoke, you could hear a pin drop. Everyone was burning. I mean, their eyes were burning through his soul. And when he spoke, it was with conviction. It was raw, authentic, real. Like, he was the voice, the heartbeat, the alpha. Who has that been the last 2 years?
Nobody. I mean, it's interesting because I think like having a player on field that when if you mess up, he's going to immediately hold you accountable, and you're almost more worried to make sure that you're doing a good job so he doesn't light you up rather than a coach. I think that's super powerful. I don't think we've had that the last.
No.
I don't think we've had the last 5 or 6 years.
And I see in the comments like Darren Lee was big in 2014. Yeah, he was big as a player. He was a great player.
Great player.
Plays. Phenomenal. He was not the heartbeat. He brought a lot of passion and energy. But he was not that guy that could hold other people accountable. Like, he would talk shit to you if you fucked up because he was on his shit, but it was all driven by Curtis Grant. And I'm telling you, they haven't had that guy. So I hope this kid can be that guy because they need someone to be that. And it can't, unfortunately, it can't be a corner. Like, Marshawn Lattimore had that type of personality, but it just can't be a corner.
Yeah, like, you're a safety or a linebacker, I think.
Safety or a linebacker. It has to be. Mm-hmm. Has to be. And so you're looking at it like, who is that guy? Honestly, I said it last year, and he didn't have the year I thought he should, but Taraja Mitchell is that guy if he's a good enough player. But you don't have to be a first-round draft pick. Curtis Grant was not a first-round draft pick. He split time with Raekwon McMillan, but he had their respect. He was a good player. He handled his business. He did his job, and then he was that motherfucking voice. You know what I mean? Yeah. That, like, if you knew at halftime, if the corners were playing like shit, he was going to be over there, like, just in your ear. Right. And so they got to find that. And I think that's the biggest thing Jim Knowles is going to have to do. Not only institute his defense, not only make strides at the linebacker position, make strides at the safety position, and develop a pass rush. All those things they have to do. But more important than any of that, he needs to develop a culture and an attitude. And it comes with an alpha. Who is the alpha? Identify the alpha, empower the alpha, and get him to drive the defense.
Right. And one of the things I noticed in the kind of watching the Michigan breakdown, when they were getting gashed, instead of guys getting mad, guys were looking around confused. Like, I think that's like one of the big differences.
I don't want to say it becomes expected, but it becomes.
It's like, accepted. Oh, shit, here we go again. It's like, oh, here we go again.
It's like, oh, shit, this defense sucks. And it's like,
yeah,
motherfucker, the defense doesn't suck. Mm-hmm. You do. like not you as a player, but the way you're playing sucks. And it's just. We got a lot of work to do, and I know they're working on it. I've heard some great things from spring practice. The defense is, you know, it's got false swagger back, right? It's got false confidence where they're excited about the new defense. It's not real yet. They're not dominating anyone yet, but they feel a different energy, right? And it's part of it is the grass is always greener, but now it's about what they do with it. If they capitalize on it and push forward with it and actually turn it into real confidence and real swagger, then you got something, right? So it'll be interesting to see. And I'm excited to see kind of the end of spring ball. What is the word, right? Yeah. What is the vibe?
And it's interesting because Knowles, if you look at his resume, the one thing, if you're going to consider him an expert at, his strong point as a coach, it's linebacker play. And that's no secret. I mean, they had an All-American linebacker down there at Oklahoma State, where really we have the all American linebacker talent in the room that just hadn't been being developed. I do think that Billy Davis is owed a little bit of an apology because it was ever since his guys left the room, it's been a little little iffy.
All those people that thought Bill Davis sucked, where you at now?
I'm right here and I'm sorry.
I'm sorry.
I try to
I'm
tell right people here. Bill Davis is a great football coach. Mm-hmm. He really is. He wasn't a great recruiter because he'd been an NFL coach for 25 years, but he's a phenomenal football coach. He was just on the most dysfunctional defensive staff I've ever seen. And he was thrown to the wolves.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, so right around that time when linebackers were struggling, when the defense was struggling, when Bill Davis was the coach there, I just got my first Ohio State preview show and post-game show in Akron. And one of the segments that I had produced was the Beat Up Bill Davis segment. And I would take callers. Callers would just come in and just slam Bill Davis again and again and again and again. And so I'm sorry. I'm sorry, Bill Davis. Well,
that's why they're called fans.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That was
because I'll be honest. You watch the film and be like, damn, what is this linebacker coach doing? I get it. Mm-hmm. I see it. It just – it's unfortunate because it's top to bottom. It's not just
that's my formal apology to Bill Davis. But on the camp side, Zach, what do you have? What are you hearing? Because it's funny because like there's like a lot of message boards, a lot of insiders out there, and it's fun to read about. It's cool. But
isn't it hilarious? Like all these insiders, right? All these people that have inside sources, they always say like, I'll give it to you right now. Ready? Jaxon Smith-Njigba looks unbelievable
faster
through spring. Travion Henderson got bigger and they expect a huge jump and a great season, right? Mm-hmm. CJ Stroud has looked like the number one overall pick. He hasn't missed a throw all spring. Like I can give you all the storylines. It's anyone that was good last year has gotten better, right?
That's plus what you're sprinkling a five-star from last year that was a freshman too.
Yeah,
like
right.
Jack Sawyer.
Jack Sawyer looks like a grown man. It's like shit like that. You're like, what the fuck? You don't know. Like you ain't at practice. You don't know a damn thing. Who told you that? You do not know shit. It's just hilarious. But I've heard some great things. And obviously I'm not a reporter. Like I don't hit up my sources or really my friends is who it is. I don't hit them up and ask them for info because we wouldn't be friends. If I was digging for info to report to people, they'd be like, well, damn, I can't talk to my guy. Like that's my boy. So I will never do that. But I always want to know about guys. One, the receivers. I always want to know about the receivers and I want to know about my guys. And I'll tell you the most exciting thing that I have been told is that Cameron Babb is 100% healthy and he looks like an Ohio State starter, you know, and really it's just about prayers that he stays healthy at this point. And man, when I heard that, I'm not kidding you. I almost shed a tear. And the guy I was talking to, I've said it on here and I said it to him and he was like, that is the best way to describe him is that I hope my son becomes like him. There's no better way to say it. Like he's a great kid. Okay. You say that about fucking everyone, right? You know, awesome kid, like nice kid, whatever. No, I want my son to be exactly like him. And when I said that, the guy I was talking to was like, you know what? You're damn right. You're damn right. That's same. And so he's one that I was so excited to hear about that he's doing so well. So really just, I mean, prayers that he stays healthy because the kid deserves it. And like I said, he was one of my favorite high school prospects I ever recruited. You know, I can say that now. Now that I'm not coaching and not going to coach again, I could tell you if I thought he sucked. But straight up, he wasn't. The other guy they said might be the best player in the room is Marvin Harrison Jr.
Yeah,
when he said that. I was like, excuse me, best player in the room. Like, did you see Jaxon Smith-Njigba? But you know, in Jigba,
I've literally after the greatest receiver performance in the history of the sport. From a high school or college level, it's like, who's going to be the best? And it's interesting.
Oh, I mean, I'm just saying.
Me and you have a theory on it. Me and you have a theory on Marvin Harrison Jr.
If Cameron Babb is as advertised and stays healthy and is healthy, right? We know Jaxon Smith-Njigba is going to be a Biletnikoff candidate, right? Mm-hmm. Type of player. So that's two. Marvin Harrison Jr. is supposedly one of the best in the room through spring, right? Or at least pushing for it. That's three. Then you have Emeka Egbuka, who was outstanding. And now you're talking about Julian Fleming pushing for that four spot, maybe fifth. Wild. Mm. Wild times in Ridgemont High, right? Like,
yeah. He's getting targets. I mean, he's running with the ones currently, and they're
yeah, but and listen, for some reason, I think because everyone else is so talented, this show sometimes seems like a shit on Julian Fleming show, which it's not at all. Like, I think the kid has a chance to be a great player. But running with the ones in spring ball when you're a veteran doesn't mean shit. Right. He's going to have to lose that spot. And if they want him to stick around, he's not going to lose that spot until the week before training camp. Right. Or I mean, not before training camp, before the games, because otherwise he's going to transfer and they don't want that. And the other side of it is, let's say Emeka Egbuka is slightly better than him or Cameron Babb is slightly better than him. Right.
Rotate.
That doesn't mean he's going to be better than him come game one. right? There's a lot of development that goes on in the summer and training camp. So you just got to make sure you don't lose anybody after spring, especially in the transfer portal era. So Julian Fleming running with the ones doesn't mean shit to me other than, you know, he's good enough to play, right? He might not be one of the best three. He might be, but they know for damn sure they want him to be here in the fall. So he better run with the ones. The Cameron Babb ain't going anywhere, right? JSN's obviously going to be a one. He ain't going anywhere. Those young two, you gotta figure out where they fit. And the guy that, I don't want to say is odd man out because he has elite speed, is Jaden Ballard. Like, where does he fit in now? And is he a role player? Is he a Jameson Williams for this offense? Because they really, that's what they don't have, right? I can understand the conversation about, we don't need Jameson Williams. We have Chris Olave and Garrett Wilson. It's like, yeah, but you do, but whatever. I get it. You got by without him. But this receiver room now has lost that. They don't have a Chris Olave to take the top off the coverage, like 4.38 speed or whatever he is, right? They don't have that Jameson Williams guy. They have guys that can run, but not that 100-meter dash athlete, right? That Devin Smith. And so Jaden Ballard is that. And so he provides a little something for you.
Right. And he's you know, he's going to be, I believe, a redshirt freshman. So he's still young and hopefully
he's still got plenty of time. But I mean, for this around. Season.
Right. For this season also, I think it's interesting. I think that Brian Hartline, the treatment of Julian Fleming, I think is two things. One, they want to see him 100% healthy, go through an entire camp, get him as many targets as they can so they can see the kind of player he is. Secondly, I hope that Brian Hartline and that staff learned from the way they handled the wide receiver room last year. Because we talked about it a couple times. They never had to lose Jameson Williams. No. Like, if they would have handled it differently, they could have kept Jameson Williams. So to me, it looks like, okay, we've kind of learned from the Jameson thing. He should have been here. He was good enough to play here. Let's make sure we keep this wide receiver room in fold, because the more talent we have here, the better. And the last thing you want to do is equip your enemies for war. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, honestly, if it wasn't for the knee injury, Alabama's national champions because we equipped them with that weapon.
Yeah, without a doubt. And Ohio State didn't make the playoffs. So, you know, now, they not because of offensive production, but you don't know. You don't know what one playmaker could have done. What do you have, 14 more touchdowns? Who knows? But anyways, I mean, you can rewrite history with hindsight all day long. It's 2020. Never hasn't been.
But I just like that Brian Hartline's learning is kind of what I'm gathering from this on the outside looking in.
Yeah, but I don't think, like, if he loses Julian Fleming, I don't think Julian Fleming goes to Alabama and wins a national championship for them. Like, he's not that caliber player, but I know what you mean.
Yeah, watch this. watch this. Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. All right, bet.
Oh, gee, this is not a hill you're going to die on, is it?
Yeah, I wouldn't, but if he ended up at Alabama with Nick Saban, all right, bet. I've seen the receivers they trotted out after James Williams got hurt. All right, bet. All right, enough of that. Zach, you got anything else for today?
No, I don't, but I did want to mention our squares board. So I paid out all squares yesterday, all squares for the whole tournament so far. But you still have a chance to win. The final four games, you win $400. The national championship, you win $1,000. We have 28 squares left. If you want in for the final four and the national championship game, Venmo $100 to Cameron Media, and we will put you on the board. You have a chance to win. Two chances to win $400 and a chance to win $1,000. I did want to mention that. I probably should tweet about it just to see if anyone else wants in on the board. But other than that, Chris, that's all I got. Menace out.
Cool. Menace out.